Fastamai, good evening and welcome to this week's episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, we hear about plans to deal with waste in all its forms. Tim Baker explains his project to move silt from Peel Marina, and Manx Utilities chairman Dr. Alex Allenson explains the board's scheme to clean up Douglas Bay. And McVannan experienced renewed interest at a time of constitutional crisis. We speak to Life President Bernard Moffat. Plans to move thousands of tons of contaminated silt from Peel Marina to a temporary lagoon have been fairly scrutinised. At least that's according to the MHK who's behind them. DOI member Tim Baker says by working closely with DEFA and listening to groups like the Manx Wildlife Trust, environmental standards for the project have been met. He's paid tribute to the work of a cross-government steering group after the first phase of its project to deal with the waste was passed by the planning committee last week. Mr. Baker is also the planning committee chairman, so had to leave the room whilst the decision was made. He says there was no conflict of interest in working with DEFA as the environmental regulator to develop the plan, and not to do so would have been naive. If no appeals are lodged in the 21-day period for them, the department will soon be able to construct a temporary lagoon to drain the silt, pumping the wastewater back into the River Neb. Once dredged, the silt will be taken in trucks to the facility, which is in a field behind the Peel Power Station. Mr. Baker says there's only a narrow window in which dredging can take place this year, so initially the silt will be transported in vans, but the long-term aim is to pipe the material directly from the marina into the lagoon. The issue has dogged marina users for years, with an estimated 45,000 tonnes of silt needing to be removed. I asked Mr. Baker to explain the first phase of the silt project. Now the plans have been approved.
The basic approach is to take the silt out of Peel Marina and take it to some fields known as Ballaturson Fields, just at the back of the power station in Peel, where, as you described, we create a lagoon in which we will place the silt, and it will then, what's called dewater, which basically means in simple terms dry out over a period of time. It'll dewater under gravity, so just putting the silt in there, that natural gravitational process will just lead to the water running out over a period of time, and it becomes, the longer you leave it there, the drier it becomes. So you create a lagoon to manage that runoff. That water obviously has to be managed and has to be transmitted back to the marina through a system of pipework, which will obviously be very heavily monitored by environmental health.
And is that water deemed to be safe once it's been drained from the silt?
Safe's an interesting word. It's going to be suitable to go back into the marine environment. So, you know, we're effectively putting that liquid back where it's come from, but it's going to be subject to a rigorous monitoring regime from DEFA Environmental Health and tolerances around the content of that runoff. So there is a proper management regime.
And how are you going to move the silt from the marina to this lagoon?
There's two potential approaches. One is a long-term approach will be to pump it, so using a suction dredger in the marina, and then pump it through a pipe out to the fields, which are not a huge distance away from the marina. That's one approach. The other approach is basic road haulage, and the initial phase, we will, as we take the silt out of what's known as the river channel, that is it's coarser material, so that's more suitable for road haulage. So the initial phase will be, over the first few months, we'll be using the road haulage, and that will allow us to mobilise the equipment and to start work sooner, because we only have a limited dredging window in what's left of the 2019 period, because we are constrained by limitations around fish migration, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to mobilise and quicker and lower cost using that road haulage method, and that's what we're likely to do for dredging that we do in this particular window.
And how much silt is expected to be moved? I've heard 45,000 tonnes, is that correct?
Yes, that is the estimate. We've done some detailed survey work of the marina, and that would be to take it back to its published depths, which is the ideal. Obviously, the more we take out, the better. We could get away with doing less, but obviously all you're doing is leaving it there for the future, and it's going to have to come out at some point, because this is a recurring process. Our intention is to remove as much as possible, but there is more in there than we'd originally estimated. Part of that is, of course, it's taken us a bit longer to get to this point point than we ideally set out to do. We've been running this process now since May 2017, and it's great that we finally achieved the big milestone, fundamental milestone of getting planning consent. And I've got to pay tribute to everybody who's worked so diligently over this period, because it's been a very, very challenging situation. It's required very joined up working from officers in Department of Infrastructure and DEFA in particular, and obviously the whole planning process also is quite an intensive process, because quite rightly people want to know, how is this being managed, what's the consequences, what are you going to do with the material, and how do we ensure that everything is appropriate? So,
well, are you completely satisfied that through that process, the planning one, any conflicts of interest were clearly separated? Because obviously DEFA is the environmental regulator, but it's also part of the push to get this issue solved. So conspiracy theorists might see issues with that.
Well, DEFA wasn't really part of the push to get this solved. It's DOI.
Was it not a cross-party group that worked on it?
So, yes. I mean, as DOI member for ports, I chaired the steering group. And because of the different expertises and skill sets that were needed, we had DEFA representation on the steering group, because we needed to know what were the environmental health standards that we needed to comply with. You know, how did we make sure that DEFA as regulator was content. And the planners needed to make sure that whatever they conditioned us to do in terms of planning conditions met the requirements of their environmental health colleagues. But that's no different from any other major scheme where DEFA is determining a plan application for something which has environmental impact. DEFA environmental teams and DEFA planning are used to working in that context together, but this was a DOI submission. It would have been naive to have tried to do it in isolation, and I think we have achieved some very, very positive joined up working here, which I think was always one of the criticisms about government operating in silos. Well, I think here we've demonstrated that actually we've succeeded by not working in silos and by having that political officer dialogue as well, because it's quite an unusual construct with a political member chairing a steering group made up of officers.
I should mention within the application, the Manx Wildlife Trust, of course, made a submission, and that they did highlight a few of their concerns with the environmental impact assessments. Did you read what they put in? What was your view on it?
Well, I mean, they're a valued contributor to the consultation process, and their views were reflected in the conditions that the planning officers have laid down. So very much welcome their input into the process. And you'll recall that effectively the information, there was two stages of information. So there was the original application, and then there was a second one which responded to the concerns that had been raised by people like the Wildlife Trust, people like the DEFA environmental team. So that was, for me, the process in action, delivering a better outcome, because the DOI team refined its proposals in the light of that feedback. And obviously it did it satisfactorily to address the concerns that the planning team had.
You were recused for this bit of the meeting, obviously, because there's your plans backed by the DOI, of course. But the Manx Wildlife Trust have previously complained about the interested party status and the fact that M&H, for example, have been given that statutory footing for archaeological and historical concerns, but they haven't been granted, as the leading conservation charity, the same for the ecological concerns. And this is an example where they haven't been awarded that status on an application that clearly needs scrutiny on an environmental level. I just wondered, do you have a view on that instance?
I think it really is down to policies of DEFA as the planning authority and the DEFA minister in terms of the interested person operational policy that he issued last summer. And I think this was challenged in recent either Keyes or Timwald questions. And he articulated, as I recall, the differences between the Wildlife Trust as one of the environmental, but you know, obviously one of the leading environmental charities, but one of many on the island, as opposed to Manx National Heritage having more of a statutory role. And I think the other point to bear in mind is, of course, that DEFA has a very, very strong ecosystems team, and they obviously had responded as well in terms of the wildlife and biodiversity considerations. So to some extent, there's an overlap there. I think that's a different question, really, around interested person status. But as you say, I did recuse myself quite properly from the planning process, so I don't know to what extent that was debated, because I wasn't in the room. But certainly, I do believe that the proposals have been given a very, very good level of scrutiny, and I'm really pleased that we've got to a solution which now enables us to move on to the rest of the process going forward.
MHK Tim Baker. Well, Manx Nationalist Party McVannan has reported a spike in membership interest this week following the constitutional crisis posed by developments in the UK Parliament. As a result, it plans to ramp up its presence on the islands and continue to work towards its goal of an independent Isle of Man. Well, given the disarray of British politics and the fissures appearing across the country there following the Brexit vote, could the Republican socialist agenda of McFannon appeal to the disillusioned over here? Well, life president of the party, Bernard Moffat, has been speaking to Aaron Ibanez.
There is this conception because of the rise of right-wing nationalism. But thankfully, for the most part, in the British Isles, nationalism of the type espoused by the SNP in Plaid Cymru, maybe in Curnow and Cornwall, and ourselves, it's civic nationalism. So it's not a case of blood and soil nationalists. And if you're not born in the Isle of Man or, you know, have really close family connections with the island, that you're in some way excluded.
And in terms of sort of policy, it's quite leftist. It's, you know, you refer to the morally dubious financial sector. You know, you've claimed to have been quite progressive on, you know, your environmental stance from the 60s, and even when it comes to civil rights and sort of the homosexual debate in the early 90s, you claim to be at the forefront of progressive thinking then?
Well, we were associated with it. And I mean, this was because there was a crossover between things that individuals were involved in. I was involved in the trade union movement, and I was also involved in the Manx Council for Civil Liberties. So you necessarily brought that thinking into the political arena as well.
Let's talk about membership then. What are the numbers like? And I suppose, what's the average age?
The numbers, you're more likely to get the numbers of the Freemasons out of the head of the local lodge here than you are of likely to get the numbers in McFannan out of me. Our internal business and our administration is a matter for us. What I can tell you, and tell you very clearly, the financial position of the party, and that is extremely healthy at the present time.
Is McFannan a party of sentiment? Is it a party that sort of revels in its own past and its own ideals?
Well, it depends on the individual. Nationalists celebrate the Isle of Man and the good things about the Isle of Man.
So does that appeal to young people, do you think?
I don't know. And that's one of the great connections that we've got to establish in the next few years. We've got to have a generation of younger people coming through. Now, interestingly, there is a very vibrant youth scene on the cultural side, and at the present time there seems to be a feeling that if you're involved on the cultural side, for some reason you shouldn't be involved on the political side, you know, the language or music, whatever. So we've got to draw some of those younger people back into the movement, and the only way to do that is to ensure that when they come in and they have ideas and they're different ideas from the old guard, that those ideas are accepted and there's a willingness to embrace the change that younger people want and take the party in the direction that younger people want.
Will we see a McFannan candidate in 2021?
No, you won't see official McFannan candidates for the House of Keys because of the abstentionist policy. But there's nothing at all to stop individual members of McFannan standing for the House of Keys. And, you know, I get sick of this political argument and the House of Keys that gets thrown at us over the years. Some of the most successful people who've been in the House of Keys, including the last Chief Minister, were former members of McFannan. I'm not interested in a narrow nationalist agenda. I'm interested in a national agenda for the Isle of Man that puts the Isle of Man first. If the interest groups that support that come from Athol Street or from Prospect Hill or from whatever, I can make common cause with them, and I'm sure any nationalist can.
Life President of McFannan, Bernard Moffat. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. The promenade redevelopment gives Manx Utilities the chance to clean up its act in Douglas Bay, according to the chairman of the board, Dr. Alex Allinson. During heavy downpours, the holding tanks under the highway overflow and discharge dilute sewage into the sea via several outfall pipes. Manx Utilities admits this is a likely cause of the poor bathing water quality in the capital. Over the last 3 years, this quality has never gone above sufficient, according to EU standards set in 2006, and was even poor on several occasions. Samples at three locations along Douglas Bay, Summerhill, Central and Broadway are tested for bacteriological contamination by the government laboratory each week throughout the bathing water season, which is May until September. 19 locations are monitored island-wide, and not all of them are considered beaches where people regularly swim. Dr. Allinson admits addressing this issue was a daunting task due to the difficulty accessing the Victorian infrastructure underneath the prom, but the redevelopment provided a perfect excuse. He explained to me what lies beneath Douglas Promenade.
What we've got in Douglas is two outlets for storm drainage. So at times when we have really heavy downpours, at the moment that water comes out of those outlets. And so at various times that can add to pollution in Douglas Bay. Now, bathing water quality is all about bacterial count. So we're talking about sewage, we're talking about stuff coming off the roads going into Douglas Bay that can affect water quality. Also, we look after the pipeline. That's part of our infrastructure, but it's used by the creamery. And I suppose the big debate is whether that adds to that pollution as well in terms of bacterial count. Because we know at certain times you can see a bit of a white slick there, and it's obviously more prominent when we've got a cruise liner parked straight over it. But whether that actually causes increased bacterial count or not, or whether it's just the aesthetics of it, one of the things with the Douglas Prom development is we're going to be improving all our infrastructure around the prom so we get far less leakages, that all that stormwater can be stored in tanks or transported with pumps to Merriweg. And so far less of it, if not none of it, will go into the bay. So we'll clean up the bay that way. But we're also working with the creamery to analyse the Wey pipeline and see what can be done to reduce both any possibility of pollution there, but also the aesthetics to make sure we get rid of that white slick from time to time.
Two outfall pipes. Is that just overspill when there's extreme rain or wind, or is the discharging of raw sewage into the bay?
It's overspill.
Overspill.
Really, the underneath the prom, that's one of the reasons why it's such an expensive scheme. There's a huge amount of infrastructure there in terms of pipelines. And those holding tanks during the prom redevelopment will be upgraded, will be made a lot more sustainable to try to get around some of these instances of pollution. But to put it in perspective, that the last set of records we had in 2016 showed, using the 2006 bathing directives, which are the newest ones we have, showed poor results only on two occasions around the Summerhill area and in three occasions around the Central area during the entire year. So it's not a constant issue, but it's obviously something that we're going to deal with.
But never above sufficient on those guidelines for the last 3 years, the newest ones.
Yep.
That must be a concern. I mean, it's the gateway to the capital. If we're going to encourage this clean image, this biosphere image, cruise ships and what have you, is this not high enough of a priority for you guys? I know Peel was addressed and they're looking at other areas, but Douglas didn't seem to be as high on that list. I just wonder why not.
Because at Peel, Lexi and Baldrum, we have got raw sewage going straight into the sea. We don't have that in Douglas. You're quite right that the water quality there isn't brilliant and should be a lot better. But there are lots of other determinants about poor water quality. This is a working beach. We've got the sea terminal here. People walk their dogs along the beach. People play along the beach. And you do get industrial pollution coming in as well. What we're trying to do is clean up our act, but also we'll be working with Douglas Council to try to clean up the beach as a whole.
Those changes you mentioned to the infrastructure, the holding tanks, are the changes designed to stop or reduce the overspill?
We are aiming to stop. Mm. We are aiming to have the pumping mechanisms so we can get that water away from Douglas rather than let it spill over into the sea.
And are these changes hoped to, well, I'm not sure with the prom work, but they hope to come into effect before the bathing season begins or during it? What's the timeline for this?
They're going to be carried out in conjunction with the rest of the prom work, so we're looking over the next 12 months.
And the standards you referenced, the 2006 directive, the Isle of Man chose to adopt these standards, though they're not binding standards. We had the 1970 26 standards, which we've been publishing results against, which show poor in places like Peel, but generally the pictures are brighter with those standards. New standards, a bit more stringent, 2006 directive, and I believe that applies later this year as a guideline. Is that correct or not?
DEFRA are doing some work at the moment, because it is a little bit complicated, because we've got the green flag standards and we've got the bathing quality standards. And some people might say, well, why on earth are we adopting EU standards just as the UK are pulling out from them? Because they're international standards.
And the EU adopted them in 2015, I believe, they've been starting following them.
Exactly. So if you've got to benchmark yourself against something, this is a good benchmark. And this is all about water quality in terms of bacterial count, the stuff that makes you feel ill, the stuff that makes you sick afterwards. So it makes sense. What we're going to be doing with DEFRA is they're going to be looking at which of the bathing beaches should be classified as that, and then look at the pollution that they get, whether it's from sewage, whether it's from the rivers coming down, whether it's from other areas, to try to clean them up as much as possible and make sure we get the right standards. But as you said, you've got sort of poor, good, sufficient, excellent. What are we aiming for? Because we could spend a huge amount of money for excellence. Do we need to? We need to quantify that so that we're not wasting money in the wrong areas at the wrong times.
And as well, I suppose, that's a large investment for Manx Utilities if you were to try to address all of them.
It is indeed, particularly when you look at some of the works we're doing at Peel and Lexi. We will be working very closely with local communities to make those beaches as clean as possible and then constantly monitor them. For instance, in Peel, we're going to put in ultraviolet treatment so that the water that goes out is as clean as possible. We're not planning to extend the outfall pipe that exists there at the moment, but we need to constantly look at that to see if in the future we might have to. I don't think we will. Same with Laxey, but we need to constantly monitor.
Now, I have to ask this, and I appreciate that it's somewhat of a legacy issue, but I suppose why was there such oversight in terms of Douglas that didn't see the connections or the sufficient connections to Miri Beg to deal with this overspill?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think part of it is because of the Victorian infrastructure we've inherited, that the holding tanks are difficult to access without digging up the whole prom. We're now digging up the whole prom, so we're able to do those. Mm. Also, there's been problems, as you're well aware, with the seawall itself and cracks in that, and those have had consequences with us. So now we have the opportunity to clean this up properly. Also, I think that because we've only recently, over the last couple of years, been measuring according to the newer bathing standards, we've become more aware of the problem.
We'll move back to the Wey pipeline, which is Manx Utilities are releasing it to Isle of Man creameries for their discharge of the Wey water. Now, there was a study done by Dr. Michelle Haywood. She did a dive to assess what the pollution was, and I'm not sure on the bacteria count, but certainly she saw a negligible impact of the Wey, and that was funded by the creameries. Now, that's now in play as well with your three parties working together. What is your responsibility with this in terms of being the owners of the pipe?
It's a bit of a strange relationship that we've got the infrastructure and we're leasing it to the creamery. And they've been using it for the last 15 years. And that's fairly common standard with quite a few different other countries like
Scotland.
Orkney and creameries there. So you've got whey products coming out. And really what the diving study showed was that it actually seems to be helping the wildlife there in terms of fish, in terms of sea anemones, in terms of microplankton, rather than being a pollutant or perhaps destroying the environment, because I know that certainly the Douglas councillors, there were some comments there about it causing problems with the seaweed and things like that. The pictures I've seen at the outfall pipe actually show quite a really healthy microcosm there, because what you're doing is giving it protein. But we also know that aesthetically it doesn't look nice. You've got this white slick from time to time. So we're dealing at the moment with some modelling. We're going to be employing divers to go down there this summer to look at ways that we can try to get rid of that visible effect, but also do far more studies of any increased bacterial counts around that area. We're talking quite a long way from the beach, though. And so in terms of bathing quality, I'm not sure whether this is a real problem, but we need to look into it and be absolutely certain that we're helping the issue and not being part of the cause.
Isle of Man Creamery, I believe, committed to work with Manx Utilities to seek an extension to that pipeline. Yep. Where's that in the pipeline, if you'll forgive the pun?
there are several issues with the end of the pipe. Diffusers were put on there originally, and one of them seems to have come off, probably in a storm, that we suddenly and found when the dive happened and the ends were filmed. So our divers are going to be going down there looking at the diffusers, saying, do they help or are they actually slowing the flow and so increasing the bacterial count? And we'll then do some modelling on that. We're going to try a few different mechanisms to try to increase the flow, reduce the concentration in that area. If it comes to the effects that we have to extend it, we will. But we think that by doing some fairly minor works at the ends of the pipelines, we can get around this problem.
Now, Douglas Council, they have responsibility for granting the way leave for the discharge. Now, members there have expressed concern about renewing this. This is sort of why we're visiting this issue, because the lease has come up. And they're concerned that granting a rolling five-year way leave may discourage Manx Utilities from improving that pipeline. Is that worry founded in any way?
No, it isn't. I mean, one of the issues was that we weren't aware of the problem until the recent filming. And we've made a commitment to Douglas Corporation to fix this. We will do as much as we can to fix it. We have to remember that if we suddenly stopped the pipeline, the creamery would go out of business. They wouldn't be able to function. So it's really important that we work together on this to a very vital industry for our country and get it right. So we need to make sure that the creamery are doing their responsibility in terms of pumping it out, but we need to do our job in terms of the suppliers of that pipe, the owners of that pipe, to make sure the infrastructure is up to date, and we do as much as we can to secure the beach, to secure water quality, to make it look better, but also to work with Douglas Council.
Chairman of Manx Utilities, Dr. Alex Allinson. Well, that's all from tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week, and you can listen again to this episode online as a podcast. But for now, Gurumayu, and have a good evening.